What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, I just called to say I love you. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
So, guys, you know, we've talked a lot about the concept of the Internet of Things.
Sure.
Right?
It sounds great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. This idea of an environment that's able to sense with what you are doing and who you are and be able to respond in real time.
My car and my toaster oven coordinating with each other flawlessly.
Fantastic future that we're all really excited about. This idea that we could have a reality that's defined by our own needs and wants and desires so that we just live in hedonistic pleasure forever.
But sounds great, unless you've seen the movie Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, there is a downside to this. If the machines do decide to go crazy,
they can coordinate.
Yeah, they're extremely well organized. But no, also there's a disclaimer.
I don't think there's much chance of that.
Yeah, I think self-aware machines are quite a long ways away, let alone self-aware, very ticked off machines.
And self-aware toaster ovens are pretty far down on the list of machines that would be ticked off, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I've got a question about the Internet of Things.
Sure. Ask away.
All of these things need to talk to each other, right?
That is correct.
And so if you imagine that you have a house in which you have 50 or maybe even 100 electronic devices that are communicating, it really doesn't make sense to try to wire them together, even if they're stationary devices, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't want all those cables all over the place.
Or, you know, have to drill into your walls every time you get a new toaster oven.
Yeah.
Right. And a lot of these things are things that you're going to want to be mobile anyway. You want to be able to carry them around with you or move them to a different place and still have them communicate with all the things in your Internet of Things.
Yes. Sure. Realizing my permanent dream of mobile toast.
Exactly right. So, how many things can talk to each other all at once before that crosstalk becomes a problem?
Yeah, this is an issue that we need to talk about, because in order for the Internet of Things to become a reality, we have to have the foundation, the infrastructure that allows them to communicate with one another without interference, without clogging the system. And this is where we get into the concept of a spectrum crunch or data crunch. This idea
that doesn't sound nice.
It's not good. It's not good. No, it's not like delicious crunch with a nougaty center.
It's not like Cap'n Crunch.
No. No. Well, I mean, it will cut up your mouth if you try and eat enough of it. But
no, it's more like the crunching of putting a part of your body in a vise.
Yeah, it's the crunch of too much stuff trying to fit through too narrow an opening. So like, you know, Three Stooges style, everyone's trying to get through the door at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Very much like that, except with data, with zeros and ones. So what we're talking about here is the actual physical infrastructure's capability of handling that much information, as well as the physical limitations of frequencies to hold data in the first place.
Okay, so we're going to focus today on wireless communication, right?
We
got all those cords out of the way. We don't want all the future just cluttered with cords like
right.
It's Brazil
I
or
mean,
something.
There is
I mean the movie, not the country.
There is that element as well, right? The internet backbone does have a limited bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
We can add to that. We can keep adding capacity by adding essentially more tubes to the series of tubes that is the internet. But that's not what we're focusing on here. We're focusing on that wireless communication. And really, a lot of what we're going to talk about is really going to focus on cellular communication, because that's the one that's probably the closest to hitting capacity. But all of these things kind of bleed into one another.
Right. Okay, so how do wireless devices communicate with each other?
Over the electromagnetic spectrum, Joe.
Ain't that a great spectrum?
It's one of my favorites.
Full of photons.
Yeah, well, that photons are definitely part of the electromagnetic spectrum, yes. So this is, a spectrum is, of course, an entire range. Here, we're talking about a range of frequencies of waves and wavelengths.
Right. It includes the stuff that we see, light. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Visible light is, in fact, a tiny slice of the overall electromagnetic spectrum.
But it also includes the X-rays that you get at the doctor's office or the dentist's office, or the gamma rays that are irradiating your body when someone does experiments on you.
Or microwaves that cook your food.
Yep. Radio waves that end up carrying information.
Right. And so this is all the same stuff. It's just a question of how long is the wave in that transmission?
Yeah, the wavelength is a big part of it. The frequency is directly correlated to that. So
the
long wavelengths are low frequency. So that means essentially, frequency we should define as it's how often particles of the medium, so whatever the wave is traveling through, vibrate when a wave passes through it. This is different from the period of a wave, which is where you would take one point along the wave's form and say how many times can that pass through in a second. I mean, it's a little bit different. It's two very closely related concepts. But we measure frequency in hertz. So one hertz refers to one vibration cycle per second. All right. So 1 kilohertz would be 1,000 vibration cycles in a second, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
So
on the electromagnetic spectrum, if you start from what, radio waves are the longest wavelength?
Yes. Yeah. We're talking about
the lowest frequency.
Yeah. You get to radio waves that are kilometers long, right? They are incredibly long wavelengths until you get down to the flip side, the opposite end of the spectrum, where you're talking about wavelengths that are incredibly, incredibly short.
Okay, so what are they in order? You got radio waves are the longest.
Microwaves.
Microwaves are the second longest.
Yep, then you have infrared.
Yeah.
Then visible light.
Uh-huh.
Then ultraviolet light.
Yeah.
Then X-rays.
Yeah.
And then gamma rays. And,
my favorite.
And then unobtainium. or whatever.
That is not part of the spectrum.
No, but if you are ever writing science fiction and you realize that you have to come up with some sort of energy that is not reflected on the electromagnetic spectrum, you can only really go up.
It goes past gamma waves. Yeah.
It's
turning the dial to 11.
Exactly. The only reason we don't know about it is because our instruments are incapable of measuring it.
Yeah.
That's inaccurate.
Okay, but so these different parts of the spectrum we've talked about, they're not like a single isolated value. Within each of these ranges, there are a whole lot of values.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you can have radio waves of much different frequencies.
Yes, in fact, anyone who's played with a radio at all knows this, because the radio station that corresponds to the frequency of that radio wave. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in the AM spectrum, you go from 535 kilohertz to 1.605 megahertz. So station 535 to 1605, that's a reflection of the frequency of those radio waves.
Right. And that's how we can have so many radio stations floating around in the air around us without having them interfere with one another. Your radio is a specific instrument that you tune to one of those frequencies and pick that one up.
Absolutely. So if you ever enter an area where two different competing radio stations have the same or very similar frequencies, you might get that interference.
That's when you get that static kind of overlap.
Yeah, you can hear two things going on at once, and it sounds like, you know, that you really need to change the station, or perhaps you might hear secret messages only you can decipher, and that gets scary. So on the FM side, same sort of thing, from 8.8 megahertz to 10.8 megahertz. That's where you get the FM stations 88 to 108. They correspond again to that range of frequencies. So that's just in, you know, broadcast radio here in the United States. Radio waves encompass a much broader spectrum even than that.
Oh, sure.
And this is where we're looking at using electromagnetic radiation to carry data. And the problem is that not all wavelengths are ideal for carrying lots of data. Some are great at carrying small amounts of data, but in order to carry a lot of data, you need a lot of time. So mm-hmm. we're really talking about throughput here. You
right.
know, because
mm-hmm.
the speed is still the speed of light, right? It's going to carry a single bit of information the same speed no matter what the frequency of the wavelength is. But the amount of information.
Yeah, how many times can it send a signal in that span of time?
Right. Or how many bits can it carry along in that span of time?
Right.
Oh, right. So the higher frequency, the wavelength, the more information it can carry.
Generally speaking, it gets a little complicated because it also depends upon the implementation you're using.
A little complicated. We're talking about wireless here. This is really difficult stuff.
Yeah, we're actually not going
The engineers who designed this are crazy smart people.
Oh, yeah.
We're not going to go too deeply into the physics and technology because to do so would require a suite of episodes. I mean, what we're talking about right here would constitute an entire semester's worth of courses in the university level.
Yeah, we're simplifying.
Yeah, we are for the purposes of this discussion, simplifying so that we can talk about what the problem is. But in order to talk about the problem, we have to lay the groundwork.
Okay, so who decides who gets to use what parts of the radio spectrum, right? You can't have two different radio stations in the same place broadcasting at the same frequency. I imagine that applies to all different kinds of radio transmissions.
Absolutely.
So if you're a cell phone tower, if you're whatever you are that needs to be sending data back and forth, you've got to know who can use what frequency.
Yes, because otherwise you do have this interference problem, mm-hmm. and you have to avoid those interference problems as best as you possibly can. So it depends upon where you live, but in general, most places in the world, your local, as in your national government, when I say local, I mean
nationally,
yeah,
local.
You're nationally local.
Your world government.
Because not
yes.
everyone listening to this
secret
show.
Secret world government.
Not everyone listening to this show is from the United States. So, but generally speaking, the government decides which parts of the spectrum go to which applications. So, for example, in the United States, there are large bands, frequencies that are dedicated to things like military use.
Mm-hmm.
And no one else is allowed to touch that. Even if the military is not making full use of it, it is reserved for military use. And then there may be narrow bands that are reserved for specific cell phone carriers. So no other cell phone carrier can use that specific band of frequencies. They might operate in a similar band of frequencies, but they won't have overlapping ones necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So this gets really, really complicated. You have to be able to legislate this and say, this goes to you, this goes to you, this goes to you, and you're limited by this.
And it's, of course, only gotten more complicated in the past couple decades as cell phone use has zapped crazy out of the stratosphere.
Well, yeah, things like smartphones have put such a huge load on the cellular networks.
Right, because with smartphones, you're not just using those radio signals to carry your voice. You're trying to download pictures of
cat videos
and get Axl Rose on your phone and
yeah, singing to your cat.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is cat related.
Doing FaceTime with Axl Rose.
Right.
I meant pictures
and his cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. We have to keep the cats in this or else they will overthrow us. Well, at any rate, like you were saying, Lauren, the cell phone use has definitely complicated matters. And then on top of that, we have all the different wireless technologies that have debuted over the years, everything from Wi-Fi to Zigbee to Bluetooth. These are different protocols that use wireless communication, usually in the 2.4 or 2.5 gigahertz range. A few of them are in the 5 gigahertz range. And that complicates matters more. Now, we've got some big, big issues here, like the idea of the capacity. Like, what is the capacity for wireless communication? That's actually really complicated to answer. Because if we were to say, all right, this one frequency band within this one geographic region can carry X amount of data and no more, that's not entirely accurate. One thing that is helping is that we have devices that have really good error checking algorithms. And those error checking algorithms, what they do is they're able to help separate the signal from the noise. So the noise would be all the different transmissions that don't have anything to do with what you are actively trying to do.
It's a fine frequency tuner, basically.
Right. And on top of that, the actual infrastructure, the things that receive messages and route information have a limitation on how many connections they can actively handle at a given time. That's largely based upon the state of the art of the technology at the time, as well as the density of those things within whatever geographic region you're talking about.
Yeah, it's due to our capacity to program a device to handle a certain number of incoming connections, because it computers get confused when you have too many things trying to go on at once.
Yeah, if you think of it in the old wired terms, it makes it a lot easier, right? Let's let's talk about, like, if you had an old router that was not a Wi-Fi router. It was a router that hooked up to your modem, and it allowed you to physically plug Ethernet cables into that router. I used to have
all y'all remember those? Yeah.
I remember them. They looked like a big one looked like a harmonica.
Yeah, it really did. It really
I just wanted to see if I could play a tune on it.
But. Yeah. Well, you can download tunes on using them.
Because it's got all those ports. Yeah.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And it has a finite number of ports.
Right. And once you reach that finite number, you ain't plugging anything else into that router. That's it. You would have to unplug something else before you could plug a new thing in. And it had a very easy to understand physical limitation of how many devices could plug into that router. Well, when you get to Wi-Fi, those connections become invisible if you're not hardwiring stuff to your router. I still hardwire a lot of stuff to my Wi-Fi because I like to game and like to watch things on my gaming consoles. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, you have more connections than what you can see, right? And so the thing is that the limitation is still there. These devices have a capacity that they can't really go beyond. If they try to, then they're shuffling. They're juggling all of these different tasks and trying to respond to them as quickly as possible, which slows everything else down. If you have ever been in a high density area during a big event when people are using their phones a lot, like a concert or Dragon Con or CES, something like that, then you've had the experience of your phone not making a connection. You might not even be able to make a phone call in extreme circumstances. And that's really when the network is starting to get overwhelmed. It's getting more requests from devices than it can actually process simultaneously. And that's where we start to see the real spectrum crunch. It's not just the physical limitation of the spectrum, although that's a part of it too. Mm-hmm. It's also a physical limitation of the actual hardware that we're making. So the question is, what happens when you hit that? And the answer is that scenario I was talking about where suddenly everything is slow or you can't make a connection in the first place, which is a really frustrating. I mean, I'm sure you guys have had that example,
oh,
right?
Sure.
Where you've got, it says you've got full bars on your phone, but you can't
call
get
failed, call failed, yeah. call failed. Yeah.
I often get that in this building where we work.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though that may just be structural interference. I don't know.
Sure.
It could be. But it's also something that if you go to one of these big events, you'll see. You'll have full bars and you think, oh, I've got complete 4G service here. I can't wait to download my schedule for the day so I know where I need to go next. And then you just get that little circular waiting, icon and nothing ever happens. And it's because, again, the whole network has been jammed up. By the way, quick word of advice to people who are attending something like that. You can always try to switch to 2G networks because often those are underused compared to the faster ones. doesn't always work, but sometimes it does. It's been a lifesaver for me at CES.
Nice.
Yeah. Good I mean, tip. it takes longer to get data than it would on an unencumbered 3G or 4G network, but it works. So, so it does have its advantages. So yeah, this ended up being real issues also in places like London during the 2012 Olympics. Mm-hmm. And this was where we started to see it as a real, like, city-wide issue, not just something that's located to a convention hall.
Like one sports arena or something like that. Yeah, well, because, I mean, the city of London was basically already at its capacity for cellular use at the time.
Yeah,
before millions of people, or I don't know how many, like a whole bunch of people came into the city.
Right, and not just people, but, like, all the different news outlets that are using all that data to wirelessly send stuff back and forth between journalists. I mean, it was just an incredible demand on the system. And so what London ended up having to do, what the UK did, was for a temporary basis, they ended up reallocating some bandwidth that normally would be reserved for the military to go to this wireless communication use for the general public and for media outlets in particular to alleviate some of that demand. So it spreads the demand out a bit more and makes it a little more manageable, but it's not something that they could necessarily do perpetually unless they were to look at the full spectrum and say which parts of these are of the spectrum are really necessary for what they're doing right now and which ones can we repurpose so that we can stave off the spectrum crunch. Keep in mind, if we keep building more and more internet-connected devices, specifically cellular-connected devices, this, even if we alleviate it by adding in more spectrum, we're still heading toward that problem. Mm-hmm. We're just heading toward it. You know, the problem is a little further out than it was before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, and also it's not necessarily easy to just, for example, build a whole bunch more cellular towers, right?
Yeah. So you guys know the whole NIMBY, not in my backyard thing, mm-hmm. right? I mean, this applies to all sorts of things, right? Anything that you think will end up affecting the property value of your home or a quality of life issue. It's one of those things that people react very strongly to. So the idea of erecting more cell towers is not really that attractive to a lot of people. It's something that could potentially help alleviate the problem a little bit. The idea being that with cell phones, you have these cell sites that represent a certain geographic area of service. You could divide those cells into smaller units so that they're servicing smaller areas. That means you're going to have more handshakes between towers whenever you have people moving through the area. But it also means that you've spread out the service capacity and you've increased it as a result. But because it's so hard, both financially and politically, to get these things built, it's not really seen as an attractive solution to spectrum crunch. And also, again, it's one of those things that you can only keep doing for so long before you have reached, you know, like, I can't move because all the cell phone towers, right?
I'm wearing one as a hat.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not helping.
Like, my environment is responding to me in real time, but I can't go anywhere, so I guess it's a good thing that it gets to be all things to me all the time. I haven't seen a person in years. Yeah. So we are talking about an issue that tends to be regional, not global.
Sure.
So this is something that tends to affect densely populated areas that have a high population of people with connected devices, specifically cellularly connected devices. And so that's really where we would expect to see this. And it tends to be something that has peaks and valleys as well, right? Because there are times of the day when there aren't as many people on the network. And on those times, things might seem perfectly fine. But at peak performance, it may suddenly seem like you can't get a call out at all. And in moments of extreme circumstances, like what we saw post 9/11, where you had a lot of people trying to use the network in order to check on one another, understandably so, then it's going to overload the system to the point where it doesn't work at all. Mm-hmm. So it is regional, not necessarily global, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't work on some sort of solution just because it's not going to affect the entire world simultaneously, at least not until we get to a point where the Internet of Things is ubiquitous across the entire globe. We still need to worry about it. So if we can't just build more cell towers and divide up those cell sites, then what can we do? One of the things is that reallocation. So you guys remember a few years ago when the United States made that switch from analog TV to digital TV? And anyone who was getting their television service over the air and they were relying on old antenna had to get a new converter box so that it could convert digital signals to analog signals so they could watch it on their television.
Right.
You remember those?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So once we made that switch, and it was painful. I mean, it was kind of, it was more painful than I anticipated. I thought a lot of people had already upgraded, but there was a large, significant portion of the population that was still on analog systems. I mean, it is an investment to upgrade your hardware like that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the same, there was overlap with the group of people who sends a lot of email forwards.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of forwarded emails about this problem.
About that, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Accurate.
So, well, when that happened, when they switched from analog to digital, it did mean that that entire spectrum of that entire section of the radio spectrum, I should say, became available because now it wasn't used for analog transmission. That had ended. And once that ended, then the government said, what can we do with this? And the FCC said, we're going to auction it off. We're going to auction off bands of frequencies to anyone who is ready to bid.
Sweet frequencies.
Yeah. This was the story. There were so many stories that came out of this, including Google getting involved. Google made some bids, and the real reason Google was bidding, at least the story anyway, was that they weren't interested. The company wasn't interested in getting portions of the spectrum. They were interested in driving the price up to the point where a specific requirement would kick in that would require net neutrality rules to apply. So it wasn't so much that we want this. It was more like we want to make sure whoever gets this has to play by the rules we want to play by.
Yeah.
Hardball.
That's kind of wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, as a fan of net neutrality,
that's
a terrifically tricksy thing.
I was okay. I'm okay with certain enormous corporations having to spend more money to get what they want. And I'm okay with them having to follow certain rules of net neutrality in order to do it. I'm biased. I admit it. But yeah, there were all these companies like Verizon, AT&T, et cetera, and pretty much any of the big wireless carriers.
Oh, I'm sure everyone was interested.
Yeah. They wanted to be able to get at this extra spectrum because that way they have the padding to expand once they start to hit capacity on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And it might mean having to upgrade existing cell phone towers to have new antennas for these particular frequency bands, I should say, or just using existing hardware that they then have, you know, signed over to them. And keep in mind, all of this is based on licenses. They're not owning any physical property. They own a license to a specific range of frequencies.
Right.
So it gets a little, wibbly wobbly, tammy wimey.
Sure, sure. But okay, this is all a hypothetical instance, right? I mean, we haven't reached capacity anywhere. What happens when we do, or if we do?
Well, what happens is if we hit capacity, we are no longer able to make calls or get data. I mean, it would be...
No more cat videos.
No more cat videos.
Well, at least not on a mobile device that's using a cellular network.
It would probably be things that would hit specific carriers in specific regions at different times. So you might suddenly get a story about how the carrier you are on in the city you live in has become unreliable. So suddenly everyone switches to a new carrier, and that carrier ends up becoming unreliable because all that weight has just shifted to them.
Sort of like rolling blackouts in areas with energy problems.
Yeah, yeah, that's not a bad example. That's a really good way of putting it. So it's something that would be really bad for consumers, and it would ultimately be bad for companies because the consumer backlash would be incredible. So we want to avoid this as best we can. But there's some people who suggest that maybe we're doing it already, that maybe this spectrum crunch is already being put off quite a bit. And the reasons for that are varied. One of them is that, if you have a handheld device that works on the cellular networks, but also is Wi-Fi capable,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people have enabled the Wi-Fi so that they're on Wi-Fi more frequently than they would be just on cellular. It's a way of, one, avoiding getting too many data costs,
mm-hmm.
right? You're not going to end up going over a data cap that way. And it also means that you don't encounter those problems if the cell network itself gets really busy.
Right. Now, Wi-Fi still uses, of course, wireless radio to communicate, but it distributes the problem.
They access small, unlicensed bits of bandwidth, I believe.
Yeah, and it's also the... It also is
and
that
it's local enough that
you're connecting to a local router,
and so you don't
have to worry about if there's space to connect to the cell tower.
Right. If the local router, as long as the local router isn't handling more requests than it has capacity for, then you should be pretty much all right. That router may not be running on the latest Wi-Fi protocols, which means that it could be slower than what you are used to, but it means that it'll at least get your request through. So, especially if it's something like voice, which tends to be pretty low on the data chain, you don't have to worry. Some also voice on cellular networks tends to be prioritized. It takes the least amount of data for, besides like a text message, for the kinds of things you would see a smartphone used as. And so it tends to be prioritized over like the data intensive stuff, like trying to get your cat videos. So if you're trying to make a phone call, it's more likely to go through than you trying to watch a video on a system that's near capacity.
Okay. And I have some statistics on the amount of Wi-Fi versus cellular use that's going on, and it's pretty significant. This is according to a paper that was published by the New America Foundation in October of 2013. And the paper, I know you'll appreciate this, was called Solving the Spectrum Crunch, Unlicensed Spectrum on a High Fiber Diet. Fiber. See what they did there?
I like to have regular service. So.
So this paper said that more than 30% of smartphone data and more than 90% of iPad data is going out over Wi-Fi and therefore eventually landline networks, rather sometimes called wireline. By the way, if you're ever reading industry stuff, sometimes that entire network will be called wireline rather than cellular networks.
Yeah, and that's the sort of thing I'm talking about where this reliance upon Wi-Fi has removed some of that burden that cellular networks were under. In fact, it's got some people like there are some researchers at the University of Southern California who have said that the conversation around the spectrum crunch has been largely the role of or inside the realm of hyperbole or hyperbole.
We are going to the hyperbole.
Yeah, I still love hyperbole.
It's an old tech stuff joke.
That'll always be with me because I love it so much. but hyperbole is certainly what the University of Southern California researchers would say was the tone of the conversation, saying that, these carriers have a vested interest in getting hold of the spectrum. For multiple reasons. One, it gives them that padding. Two, it prevents other competitors getting at that spectrum. Mm-hmm. So they are actively able to counteract competition before it even happens. But that ultimately it may not be as bad as what they had been saying because of Wi-Fi helping take some of this burden.
Exactly. I was going to say, it seems to me a kind of crucial question. Whether the Internet of Things will present a big problem for the spectrum crunch really seems to depend on what percentage of these devices in the Internet of Things connect through cellular.
Well, it also depends on how many routers do you have to handle all of those. Like, if I have a dozen connected devices in my home, my router might be fine.
Yeah.
If I have 5 dozen connected devices in my home, my router might be overwhelmed, which means that I need to have some other better router that can handle more connections, which may mean that I need to have a better internet connection to the backbone, you know, from the last mile all the way over to the internet backbone. It all depends on how these devices are communicating with each other and if they have to connect to a larger network. If they do, then you still have some other issues to work out. The cellular one is the easiest one to look at because it was the one that was closest to capacity. So, and it is true that the more wireless devices you get in a area, the more likelihood you have of things like interference coming in. And generally speaking, it's not a huge problem, but then we don't live in that future where everything is connected yet.
Mm-hmm. And we're kind of moving towards it.
Pretty quickly, yeah. So if we get to a point where we suddenly realize, oh, this Internet of Things has multiple issues, the interference issue, the communications issue, and now I've got all these things that in theory could react in real time, but in reality are having all these communication errors. So my coffee never starts brewing when I'm on my way home, or my toaster oven has decided that it's no longer listening to me.
But lots of companies want me to have my mobile toast. Yeah.
Yes.
So what are some of the solutions that they're working on?
Well, frequency sharing is a big one. I mean, we talked about the reallocation. We talked about dividing up cell, service so that you can add in more towers, or you're adding more capacity in your routers, whatever that may be. But frequency sharing is a big one. This is the design of technology that can use different frequencies. And if it senses that there's a lot of congestion on one band, it can switch to another band. And thus you have kind of a dynamic system so that you don't run into these truly congested situations that we're talking about, where it's like a real-time traffic management system for wireless data. So that's one thing, and that's really promising. There are already some examples of that technology out there. There's also the idea of installing more fiber and high-capacity wired networks in high-traffic areas. So this is kind of like the Google Fiber approach, mm-hmm. this idea of getting more capacity that way. It's a big deal.
And by doing that, you know, by improving that overall system, you would be encouraging more users to make use of those Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah.
And, you know, take more of the drag off of their cellular systems.
Right. And also with that added capacity, then when you have those more advanced routers that can handle more connections, mm-hmm. you already have the conduit going to it that can handle the extra traffic.
Yeah, yeah, that thoroughfare. That report from the New America Foundation, by the way, also suggested that only some 20% of mobile device use occurs outside of Wi-Fi, or at the very least Wi-Fi capable areas. So yeah, that could be a huge handoff.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's this I hear about the open garden approach?
I love this. So we've talked a lot about the internet, but the Internet of Things may not need necessarily to tap into our existing internet. The internet is a network of networks. That's what it refers to, the internet. So that network of networks are all these different networks that can communicate with one another. Mm-hmm. The idea of the open garden is an ad hoc network, not necessarily connected to the internet. It could be self-contained. It could be enormous and self-contained. So here's an example. Let's say all three of us have a device that allows us to communicate with one another, and we're in the same general area, so they are able to send signals to each other directly through a radio frequency. And I send a message out to the two of you saying something like, okay, I'll meet you guys in the studio in 15 minutes. And you both get it because we're all in range. Everything's fine. That doesn't ever touch the internet. So anything that's going on in the internet, whether it's congested or not, does not affect that particular message. Now imagine that we have we're all in the same building, but we're on different floors. The building's got like 500 people in it, and we're all on these devices. And we're out of range of where my phone would reach, maybe, or my device would reach your devices. So if I were to try and just send a message and that was in a vacuum, it wouldn't get to you.
But if like Kristen Conger and Ben Bolin and Scott Benjamin are all in the same building and they're closer to you, and also, you know, they're at a point between you and us.
Yeah, and they all have the same sort of device, it all becomes an ad hoc network, and a message I pass through to the network will continue through their devices, eventually getting to you guys.
It's kind of like a ham radio operator using someone else as a repeater.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. So imagine that now you're talking about an Internet of Things where all these different devices can be part of this ad hoc network, dropping in or out as necessary, and being able to relay this information without ever touching the internet at all. So it's just a network that's existing on its own that is similar to but separate from the internet that we all know and love. So that's an approach that would allow the Internet of Things to continuously grow to a point where, as long as there wasn't like crazy interference going on from the potentially millions or billions of devices that would be dropping in and out of this, it could help solve some of that congestion issue as well. So that's really exciting. And the Open Garden is actually a particular project that is looking into this and using this kind of approach to try and create these ad hoc networks. So I'll have to keep an eye on it, but I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, the spectrum crunch may or may not really be the cellular apocalypse that we've been warned. I know that this was a big deal in the news over the last 3 or 4 years, particularly, like, I remember first seeing a lot of stuff about it back in 2011. Mm-hmm. But because of the shift in the use of Wi-Fi, it really does seem like, at least in the very short term, it's not as huge an issue. And we do have top people working on this problem. There's going to be a global conference about wireless communication in 2015, where some of these issues are going to be talked about by various world leaders, and to steal a word from the UK journalists, boffins, to discuss the issue. Joe does not approve of the term boffins.
That seems like a word that should describe some Antarctic bird or mammal.
So the boffin is cousin to the puffin?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's fair. All right, so anyway, that wraps up this discussion.
Mr. Boffer's boffins.
Yeah. I actually don't care for the term boffins because I think that it downplays the importance of scientists and researchers by making it a little too cartoonish, but I still can't help myself. I poke fun at everybody. At any rate, if you want me to poke fun at you, or more importantly, you have a topic about the future you would love us to talk about, get in touch with us. You can send us a message on Facebook by searching for FW Thinking. We have FW Thinking as our handle both at Twitter and Google+. We look forward to hearing from you, and you'll hear from us again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey there, parents and teachers. Are you tired of feeling like every day is a battle of wills with your kids? Let me tell you about something that changed the game. Love and Logic. Love and Logic isn't just another parenting or teaching strategy. It's a mindset shift that empowers you to raise responsible, respectful kids while keeping your sanity intact. With Love and Logic, you'll learn practical techniques to set limits with empathy, give your kids the tools they need to make smart choices, and build relationships based on mutual respect and understanding. Love and Logic stands behind their methods with a 1-year money-back guarantee. Try it out risk-free. If it doesn't change your life, we'll buy it back. Plus, you can get 10% off with code IHEART10. So if you're ready to say goodbye to power struggles and hello to peaceful, loving relationships with your kids, it's time to give Love and Logic a try. Visit their website or call today. Your sanity will thank you. Love and Logic, because parenting and teaching should be a joy, not a chore. Visit loveandlogic.com.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Pacaso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.